As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Supposed to earn it, or what to do with it, or how to keep it. You're a freak with a dark, shameful secret. But you're not the only one. Get your hidden financial fears with a blast of sun. Now your healing has begun. It's Bad with Money with
Gabe S.
Dunn.
Hello and welcome to Bad with Money, a show about finances and feelings where we don't talk down to you. We're getting into retirement today. Can you tell my audience who you are and what you do?
Sure. My name is Ann Lester, and I am a recovering portfolio manager who is now trying to talk to people about how to make retirement saving less painful.
What's a portfolio manager?
So a portfolio manager is someone who manages other people's money. I spent almost 30 years picking stocks and bonds and mutual funds in other people's retirement savings accounts.
Is that a necessary position?
Well, it depends who you ask, I guess. You know, I don't think it's as necessary now as it might have been when I got into the business 30 years ago. Right now, there are all kinds of platforms and robo-advisors and, you know, online places, brokerage firms that you can build your own portfolio. I would say for a lot of people, having someone do some of the rebalancing, and we can talk about that, what that means in a bit, is really helpful. And when you I think individuals often get overwhelmed with information overload. So I'd say for some people, depending on how they want to spend their time and if they find managing their money interesting or terrifying, it can be really helpful to have someone else helping them. And that could be a portfolio manager or somebody else.
How are you choosing the stocks?
Well, so what I did was something called multi-asset class investing. And so what we would typically do is hire a manager who would pick the stocks. So I worked at JP Morgan, so I'd look at all the JP Morgan portfolio managers and find three or four that I thought were going to do a good job and were going to do things differently from each other. So they'd behave a little differently. So sometimes when growth did well, one fund would do well. And then when value did well, another fund would do well. So you're trying to kind of balance what people are doing together. And then, you know, periodically decide that maybe we needed to make a switch. So we'd say, great, you've done a great job for us. Thank you so much. Now it's somebody else's turn. And sometimes we said that when they hadn't done such a great job. So it was kind of an active decision, right? Who we'd want to include and who we wouldn't.
So they would be picking in order to diversify the one portfolio?
Yes. Oh. Right. So what I used to manage was something called a target date fund. A target date fund is something you find in a lot of 401k plans. You can buy them on online brokerage firms. And the whole idea is to make managing your money for retirement easier by kind of coming up with a preset level of risk in your portfolio so that when you're in your 20s, maybe the portfolio is almost 100% equities, maybe it's 95% stocks. And as you get older and when you're getting closer to retirement, right, the strategy automatically takes some of the risk out, sells some of the equities, puts in some bonds. And so you don't have to go in there and keep making changes.
My audience is at varying levels of knowledge. Can you explain what an equities is?
Yep. So an equity, right, is literally a share of a company. So let's just take, I don't know, a good example, Apple, right? So Apple, once upon a time, was three guys in a garage, like with some plastic and, you know, memory boards that they were screwing together. And they found some friends and family who like gave them some money, and they started making computers. And then they did something called, you know, going public. Mm-hmm. And so they sold fractional shares of their companies, which is why we refer to stocks as shares, because you're buying literally a share of the company. Yeah. And so you're giving the company money, right? And they use that money to invest, to build factories, to like hire salespeople, to go make more money. And so you own a fractional share of how well that company does. Mm. Now, the good news is, you know, especially when you're in something called the S&P 500, which is an index of the largest 500 companies in the country, that tend to be pretty stable companies. They don't tend to go bankrupt, right? Like sometimes they do well, sometimes they don't do well. Sometimes the price goes up, sometimes the price goes down. But bottom line, you're buying some pretty safe companies. Every once in a while, something crazy happens, like Enron, and a company goes bankrupt, but like that almost never happens. So you're going to make money over time, because typically over time, the price of stocks goes up. Mm. And it goes up because those companies continue to grow, right? And they continue to grow because the population of the world keeps growing, and hopefully they become better and more productive. So you can almost assume that over the long run, and I'm talking like 10, 15, 20 mm-hmm. years, stocks typically go up a little bit more than inflation, like maybe 2 or 3% more than inflation.
Okay.
So that's kind of a prediction you can make about like, what do you think will happen over the really long term? And that has historically been, you know, for over 100 years, kind of what's happened.
So in terms of it beating inflation, that is important because the cost of living goes up, and then you're able to yep. have the money growing at a rate that is more than, so like by the time you take it out, it won't actually just mean nothing.
Exactly. So if you stick your money in the savings account that comes with your checking account, like right now you're getting 0.05% in interest. Right. And you know, as we're talking today, right, in early 2024, inflation has come down a lot from where it was last year. Like some people say it's back down to around 2%, but like you can do the math. 2% minus 0.05 is like you're losing almost 2% every year you leave your money in your savings account. So that's, you know, for a month or two or three, that's a fine place to leave your money, but it's not great for long. And certainly for retirement, mm-hmm. right, what you really want is to use stocks that go up, you know, after inflation, call it 3 to 4% a year, to compound, because the money that your stocks, you know, the amount that your money grows every year is going to grow even more next year. So if you have $100 and earn 10%, next year you'll have $110. And the year after that, you don't have $120, you have $121. And the year after that, you don't have $130, you have $133, right? You let that roll for like 25 or 30 years, and it really adds up.
Oh. So
that's compound returns.
Compound returns. So that works because it's doing percentages.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, and so the percentage is multiplying on itself. So you don't get 10% of your original amount, which is like 100. Mm-hmm. Then you just get 10 every year. You get 10% of what you have. Mm-hmm. So every year that amount gets bigger. So basically, yeah, your money doubles every 7 years if you're getting a 10% return.
It's so funny because it really is this thing that I figured out as I started making more money and like actually going into like stocks and stuff, is that you really have money and make money. Like if you already have money, it's very easy to make more money.
Yep, that is very true. And the hard part is like starting the savings. Like that's just hard work.
Yeah.
It is not fun.
That's like the main thing. Is that once you have that, yep. and like barring a disaster, you could pretty much just make money on top of money.
Yep. Yep. The trick is leaving it alone and just letting it grow.
Right. Yes. Well, the trick is making the first amount that you can feel as a cushion or that you don't need desperately, and then leaving it alone.
Yep. That's the name of the game.
So what is it? I'm just curious, like if you have a wealth manager, or you have someone running your SEP, let's say like your SEP or your Roth or whatever, because you're like a freelancer, independent, or you just want that on top of a 401k. Like, what percentage are those people supposed to take?
Well, supposed to is a strong word.
I know.
So, like, as everything in life, if, you know, you, I do believe you kind of get what you pay for. And I'll just take a step back and say that a financial advisor, right, which is what these people typically are, you know, they're financial advisors who are fiduciaries that are obligated to act in your best interest. And then they're also people, this is less common today, called stockbrokers or brokers. And they're not legally obligated to act in your best interest. They're legally obligated to show you things that are appropriate for you. So if you're hiring someone, check the small print and make sure you're hiring a fiduciary, because they are not incentivized to sell you things that make them money. They're not allowed to look at whether or not selling you this thing or that thing will make them more money. Like, that is absolutely not the way they can think about that. If you are working with a broker, right, a broker typically makes money on the number of trades you do, right? So clearly they have an incentive to get you to trade a little more, or they may get paid different commissions on different kinds of things they sell you, right? So the incentives get a little murkier there. So point number one, think about a fiduciary. Point number two, that fiduciary is typically a pretty skilled person who spent years doing this. And if you think about it from their perspective, just like you'd expect to pay a good lawyer or a good accountant, like X hundreds of dollars an hour for their services, that financial advisor is going to want to look at that kind of compensation. So here's where it gets tricky. If you have a very small balance, they typically charge you a percentage of what you have. Mm-hmm. And the smaller the balance is, the higher the percentage is that they're charging you, because they're still working back.
This is what I'm talking about. If you have money, it's easier to keep the money.
Yeah, it's like going to a fancy hotel and everything's free. Like, you pay this really high rate for the room, but then you get free internet, you get free breakfast, you get free everything, yeah. Right? You have less money and you don't get free anything. So there's a little bit of that there. So there are some financial advisors and financial planners that just charge a flat fee. Mm-hmm. And depending on how big your portfolio is, it might be better to just pay that flat fee and get some advice and then kind of do it by yourself, mm-hmm. than necessarily pay that fee every year. Into like a real life human being, and let's just remember, a real life human being is like doing stuff and answering your phone calls and like sending you emails and all that. There are more automated systems, and robo-advisors are one of them, that can do a lot of what a financial advisor does. The thing that I think is really the most valuable that a financial advisor can do for most people is hold your hand when stuff gets weird or scary, or help you make a goal and stick to it. And I think that's just better with a human being. Like, they can help you be more accountable. I think there's some, I don't want to mention any by name because I haven't checked them out in a year or two, but like, there are some financial platforms that are trying to replicate some of that experience, yeah. but it just doesn't work as well without a human being. So
yeah. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employees agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring in one place so easy. Like, think about how much you have to do in order to hire someone and how much you have to gather, plus scheduling, plus messaging. Like, if I was looking to hire someone, I would feel that it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish that I could use Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/badwithmoney. Just go to Indeed.com/badwithmoney right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/badwithmoney. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. I don't know if you know, but I'm a business myself. And I have to run everything on my own. And it is very difficult, especially to deliver you a product such as this podcast. Luckily, I have Melissa to help me. And we want to keep all the money that we make. So how do we do that? NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math, see how you'll profit from NetSuite. Everything is so expensive. How do I boost performance? How do I pay everyone? How do I cut costs? There you go. You want inventory? You want financial systems in the cloud? You got it, baby. Now through April 15th, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. Head to netsuite.com/badwithmoney. 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 I have been using Mint to manage my finances, but bad news, Mint has shut down. But here's the good news. There's a better alternative, Monarch Money. That's right. Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarch.com/badmoney. It is very stressful, confusing, and time-consuming to manage my finances. I try all the apps, as you guys know, and I've just been like flighty with them. They've never stuck. But now I have Monarch and it is easy to use. It has powerful features like collaboration tools, intuitive design, personalization, product improvements. It's just been really helpful to see everything laid out and especially be able to collaborate if I want to. Did you know that money issues are a leading cause of divorce? Yeah, we've talked about that a lot here. Monarch, the top-rated personal finance app, also has built-in collaboration features so you can invite your partner at no extra cost. Together, you can see all your finances, collaborate on your budget, and get insights on your cash flow and recurring transactions. It's the easiest way to manage your household finances. Are you saving for a down payment, a wedding, a dream vacation? Monarch makes it so easy to help you reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Of course, I've been frustrated in the past with personal finance apps that are cluttered with ads. So was Monarch. So they built a new kind of personal finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and constantly improving based on customer feedback. Experience a personal finance app that prioritizes the user experience above all else. We never sell your data to third parties or show you ads. After trying out Monarch myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/badmoney. That's monarchmoney.com/badmoney for your extended 30-day free trial. I mean, can we talk about the S&P 500? Like, is that, you know, so there's investing in that, and then there's investing in like ETFs and like all, like if someone is just like, because I was just going through my retirement fund because I didn't look at it for a while because I was dealing with a breakup that had a financial element to it. And I was like, I didn't want to look at any money things because I was so upset. But I was looking at it and I was like, okay, so it's in like ETFs and stuff and then mutual funds. And then it's also in like Apple or Microsoft. And I was like, that's interesting. So I was like, if someone's putting it together, what should they, and they're just starting, like, what do they put stuff in?
Okay, so if you're doing this by yourself, I would strongly recommend, and not just because I used to manage them, that you buy something like a target date fund or a balanced fund, because you don't have to do any thinking at all. You just go find a cost-effective one that's available and stick your money in there and don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. Then once you start investing your money and it starts growing, you can take your time, if you're interested, to become more knowledgeable so that you can start doing more if you want. And the reason I say it that way is because very often people find themselves completely paralyzed by, what if I do it wrong? I'm not sure what to do. And you sit and you wait and your money is like losing value because of inflation and you haven't started.
And it's just in there and you haven't bought anything.
Well, it's just sitting in the account, right? Exactly. Shrinking. And then they're charging you fees on the account, right? So it's literally shrinking and you're not doing anything. So, you know, I write about this a lot in the book that I've got coming out, but like one of the biggest barriers for people taking action is the fear of screwing it up. Mm-hmm. And you want to give yourself as the fewest number of decisions possible to take away that fear, because the more complex and complicated you can make it, and boy, can you make this stuff complicated. And like arguably the more complicated and sophisticated and diversified you get, like the marginally better the outcome will be.
Marginally.
But if trying to get to that super fancy portfolio like takes you 3 years to figure out how to do it, then you've just lost 3 years of compound interest. And that's crazy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. So better to start off super simple. If a target date fund feels too crazy, if this is your retirement money and you're in your 20s or 30s, just buy the S&P index, right? That's, I would say that's slightly less ideal than like buying something a little more diversified, but it's way better than not doing anything. And then you asked about like ETFs and the S&P. There's a couple different things that get thrown around, right? The S&P 500 is the name of an index that tracks the 500 largest companies in by market share, right? Not by how much they sell, but like what the value of their stock is. That index is used by portfolio managers to replicate or manage around that exposure. So you could buy an index mutual fund or an index ETF. Both of them could what we call replicate the S&P 500. So both of those things could, for very few basis points, maybe 10, maybe 20 basis points, it's 0.1 or 0.2%, right? A basis point is 1/100th. Of a percent. So pretty cost effectively get you exposure to those 500 companies. But ETF or mutual fund, like there are technical differences between the two. ETFs are often a little cheaper. Mm-hmm. So if you're doing this by yourself, ETFs are often the easiest thing to do.
What's a basis point?
A basis point is the way asset management firms and financial advisors talk about how much they charge.
Okay.
And a basis point is point. It's 0.01%. So a basis point, one basis point is 0.01%. 100 basis points is 1%.
Okay.
So if you can find an index fund for 10 basis points, that's going to charge you 0.1%, which is a pretty good deal.
Yeah. Can you talk a bit about, you said target date funds, just a little bit more about what that is, and then a balance fund?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So a target date fund and a balanced fund both do similar things in that in one fund, and you can buy target date ETFs now, they're pretty new. You could buy target date mutual funds, and just about almost all name brand mutual fund companies have these. Oh. What they do is inside of the target date fund, you'll usually find at least 10 or 15 things inside of it. And these things aren't Apple or Nvidia or Microsoft or Ford. What they are large cap equity, small cap equity, international equity, bonds, right? So inside of that fund, what they're doing is getting a mix of different kinds of stocks. So stocks from big companies, stocks from small companies, stocks from international companies, right? You kind of want to own some international companies, right? Is it, what's the company that's making Wegovia, right? That's in Norway or something.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, got it.
Yeah.
It's like, right? Like you want to own some of that, right?
Oh,
so if you just stick to the S&P, right, you're not getting some of the other good stuff that's out there.
Right. Right.
Right.
And a balanced fund is a similar thing. It's just balanced.
So target date funds change over time. So if you're, you know, 30 years old today, you're going to retire in, call it 35 years. So what's 2025 plus 35? Quick, do the math, right? 2070 or whatever that fund is, right? So you'd buy the 2070 fund.
Okay.
And in 2070, right, that fund is not going to have 75 or 90% equity like it might today. It's going to have like 50% equity or 40% equity so that you don't, you know, when the stock market goes up and down a lot, right, you don't want it to go down a lot right before you retire. So it takes some risk out of the portfolio.
Oh, so then you can only touch it. You can only get it in 2070.
You can take it whenever you want. It just odd. So, here's so much fun talking about this stuff. Okay. So when you have something called a balanced fund or a target date fund, right? You want to rebalance that every year, right? Because every year stocks go up, bonds go down, bonds go up, stocks go down, right? Stuff happens and you end up with a really different level of risk than you started with. And so every year you want to kind of tidy that up and get back to your idea of what the right level of risk is, which is how much stocks, how much bonds. A balanced fund is always going to rebalance to the same starting place.
By itself?
Well, the portfolio managers, this is what they do. So the portfolio manager will rebalance. You don't have to do anything. You buy it, you let it alone.
Okay.
Every year that balance manager will rebalance back to an aggressive balance fund might have 70% in equity. A moderate balance fund might have 50% in equity, right? And they'll just go back to that balance. You can buy that thing or sell that thing whenever you want.
Got it.
Target date funds work the same way, except instead of always rebalancing back to that same 70%, as you get older, it'll rebalance to 50% and then 40%. You can still sell it whenever you want. Like, you're not trapped in it, right? It's your choice when to buy it or sell it. But if you don't do anything, it'll just automatically get less risky. Whereas if you buy a really aggressive balance fund when you're 25 and then forget to do anything with it until you're 65, which seems hard to imagine, but in 401k plans, sometimes people do this, right? It's going to be really out of whack with, you might be very unpleasantly surprised if the market goes down like it did in 2008 and you're 63 years old, like, oh, that's ugly.
Okay. Interesting. No, I'm fascinated by all of this. You're explaining it so well. I interview a lot of people and they sound either like put upon or they're confused by having to explain like basic stuff, but you're just kind of, you're like got a good teacher voice.
Well, I don't know if I want to be, I don't want to sound like that. I think, you know, financial services professionals, right? Which is, I guess, what I am. I'm an author now. I'll call myself an author, but a financial services professional, right? We use a lot of really technical language and it's as in any field, right? You get really, because you want precise language. We're also really highly regulated if we are still working and have a financial securities license. Like, we have to be really careful with what we say. Right. And so I think that can make us sound kind of squirrely sometimes. So I'm not working for a bank anymore, so I can say whatever I want. And I have spent the last couple of years really talking to people in their 20s and 30s about how they feel about their own saving and investing and trying to understand where people get tripped up and why. Because on the one hand, it's like losing weight. Like, you eat less and exercise more and you'll lose weight. And as you said, right, making money or investing, right? Spend less than you make and invest it and then you'll be fine. Okay, so kind of that's not news. We all kind of know that, except we still can't do it, right? So why do we keep falling apart? Why does this not work? It's because it's intimidating and scary and people feel like they're going to make a mistake or they feel ashamed of how they've been behaving or they just don't want to look stupid. Mm-hmm. So they get stuck. So let's get unstuck.
Yeah. Or you're just like looking around at the larger system and you're like, well, I don't matter. None of it matters. Whatever. But I think probably, like, I was going to ask in your, so you just made a face, like in your research, because you've been talking to people of these ages, I was going to ask, like, what are you finding or what are you seeing as like a common barrier? And it's not like a nihilism.
I think for some of them, sure, it's nihilism. Like, one of my kids keeps saying the world is going to be underwater or on fire. Why am I bothering? And I'm like, well, just on the off chance that it isn't, right? Honey. Like, you know, if you're underwater, it won't matter. So save just in case, right? Here's the thing, you know, I did that compound math, like 10% a year, you get 120, you get 121, you get 133. Like, it takes, I'd say, 6 or 7 or 8 years or longer to actually see how that works. And if you're in your 20s, that's a really long time to wait for like gratification.
Yeah.
And it just until you see it happen, you don't really believe that it's going to happen. Like, oh, come on, really? Like, I know the world, it doesn't work like that. Well, it actually does and always has. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to, or at least for the last 150 years, but it's really hard to believe that until you see it. So I think some of it is like, you just kind of have to take it on faith. It's a little like magic, right? It's a little, and that doesn't feel very good. That feels really scary. The second thing, I think, and again, it's part of just human nature, but also being a little, having less experience, let's put it that way, is really hard to delay gratification. Like, it's painful not to spend money on stuff you want right now. Like, it actually hurts. And if you're saving for retirement, you're saving for, like, literally your brain thinks your future self in 40 years is a stranger. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, if people have done brain imaging studies and they show pictures of people that are all hooked up to these machines, they show them pictures of themselves and like one part of their brain lights up. And then they say, well, think about yourself, you know, tomorrow, the same part of their brain lights up. Think about yourself next year, same part of their brain lights up. Think about yourself in 15 years and a totally different part of their brain lights up, which is the same part of your brain that lights up is when you think about a stranger.
Oh, that's interesting.
So when you're saving for your own retirement, it doesn't feel like you're doing something nice for yourself, which you are. Instead, it feels like you're giving money away to some random stranger. Like, that doesn't feel good, right? It feels terrible. Yeah. It hurts, right? So building the muscle of that sacrifice, just like, and I make a lot of food analogies because I'm a spender and I struggle with like not eating the second or third or fourth cookie. So like, this is my life, right? But it's hard to build the muscle to live with the discomfort of denying yourself that thing you want. And then let's just be honest, people in their 20s and maybe 30s don't feel like they got a lot of spare cash floating around, right? And that's just true. So it's actually hard to do.
There's something cool to me about looking at my retirement fund and watching it having gone up and being like, seeing it in there. And like, so for delayed gratification, for me, I'm like trying to have the gratification be like, look at that number climbing. But also then there's also the part of me that looks at it and is like, what could I do with that money right now?
Oh, you bet. Like, oh my gosh, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Totally. So I'm trying to shift the dopamine rush to, wow, it's really growing and look how much it's growing and I could put so much more in there versus like being like, look at my money being trapped.
And look at how much I've done. And if I do the same amount in 5 years, oh my goodness, how much more is that going to be? Right. I mean that. And then there's a couple other things you can do, especially for retirement, that make it a little easier, and that is to try to make that stranger feel less strange to you. So spend some time with older people in your life. If you don't have older people in your life, maybe find some, right? And just kind of develop a little empathy for what they're doing and like, wow, that's a life I'd like to be leading. Or, oh my gosh, there was just a hysterical ad on TV from NerdWallet during one of the football games over the weekend that I caught with like, this is your future self, right? It was hysterical. And that's what you want to do, right? You want to imagine your future self like not having enough money to live the life you want. It makes the sacrifice a little easier.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
I love that ad. That was brilliant.
I haven't seen it. I'm going to go check it out. Hey guys, Gabe Dunn here. I just wanted to let you guys know that I have a Patreon at patreon.com/GabeSDunn. And on that Patreon, I'm going to start doing live hangs with everyone who is a patron. So if you want to join the Patreon, you can get all these episodes ad-free, videos of our mailbag episodes, extra writing from me, blogs, fiction, other stuff, things that I'm thinking about with regards to money and personal stories, and also now live hangs with me on Zoom once a month. So join the Patreon. And if you're not a member of the Discord, hop on over to the Discord. That's free. The link will be in the description. It's so fun. So many of you guys talk over there. It's like truly popping off. And if you're on the Discord, I would love to see you in the live hang so I get to put a face to a name. So yeah, please join patreon.com/GabeSDunn and come hang out with me. Oh my gosh. Budgeting is wild. I am trying to make progress every day. I am, as you guys know, like deeply into rebuilding my finances. It is very hard to keep motivated, but I am constantly looking at the numbers, constantly like looking at ways to cut stuff. And I'm looking for new ways to save. And when I do, I can find my financial goals easier and still have the occasional treat. With a Chime checking account, you get features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe, or get paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit. Learn more at chime.com/badmoney. I have constantly had to deal with overdraft fees my entire life. When I first learned what they were upon getting my first bank account, it was a very rude awakening. I also learned about something when I was writing my book, where a lot of banks take out money from your account in the order that makes you have overdraft fees, which is so unfair. But Chime allows you an overdraft of up to $200 with no fees. Join millions of Chime members who are working on financial progress. Chime helps you make progress with fee-free overdraft up to $200. Your next deposit is applied to your balance. Get spotted on debit card purchases and cash withdrawals. No monthly fees or maintenance fees. Over 60,000 fee-free ATMs. To date, Chime has spotted members over $20 billion. Friends give friends a boost. Eligible members get complimentary boosts to increase a friend's spot me limit. When you give a boost, they can boost you back to raise your limit. Set up direct deposit into your Chime account. After a qualifying direct deposit of $200 or more, Chime will notify you to enroll in SpotMe. With an activated debit card, Chime will spot you up to your limit when you exceed your balance. Your next direct deposit is applied to your negative balance. Chime never charges fees or interest for using SpotMe. Take more control of your finances and say goodbye to monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/badmoney. That's chime.com/badmoney. Chime feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A., members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Boosts are available to eligible Chime members enrolled in SpotMe and are subject to monthly limits. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I think shifting it to being more of a game, like an exciting thing. Like, again, like I went through this breakup. I did not look at my retirement fund for a year and a half. I probably suffered for that. I bet
maybe you didn't. I don't know.
I didn't question anything the guy was doing. I didn't like ask myself what the fees were on anything. Like, I know he's a fiduciary, but I'm like, you were just sort of letting Jesus take the wheel. Like, you can't really.
If he's a good driver, I don't know.
I don't know. I didn't even know if he was a good driver. I never checked.
Well, so here's the thing. You have to trust the advisor you're working with, right? And if you don't trust them, get another advisor just out of the gate. Like, I remember having this conversation about childcare. And if like you have to video the person who's taking care of your kids, then fire them and hire somebody else. Because if you're already at that point, it's too late. You don't trust them.
Right.
Like, listen to what your intuition is telling you. If you don't trust them, like, do some due diligence and like make a change.
Or not even trust. Just like if you don't feel like you can ask questions, or if you don't feel like they're going to answer questions well.
If you don't feel like you can ask questions, you need another advisor.
You're being really lovely right now.
I'm sorry. But then think about it from
Would
the other.
Would you like to talk to me every day?
I don't know. I'm not qualified to give financial advice anymore. Flip it around though. Like, this guy, you know, depending on the size of your account, right? He's making or not making X amount of money on you, and his time is worth whatever, right? So he's also kind of managing that. But I would argue, if you don't feel like you can actually talk to him occasionally or her, like, you really need to think about that relationship, or let them know that you don't feel comfortable asking the questions and like help. Like, this should not feel like this.
I don't think it should be scary. And also, I felt like I was bothering him a lot, but like, that's his job to be bothered.
Well, I'll flip it back and just say he may or may not feel like he wants to have clients with the size of your portfolio. Like, I don't know. Like, it may just be he's got a bad business model and he's like trying to grab clients, and he shouldn't say yes to everybody.
Right.
I'm just saying, like, that's a bad business model. That's still on them, right? That's still on this person. But you should not be in a relationship with someone who makes you feel uncomfortable about your own money.
Yes.
That's bad.
And can we talk about, like, you talk about how it's more of a DIY 401k situation than a pension. So can we talk about the difference between those and like who still has pensions and what do you do now with your like, okay, now I'm a 401k situation?
It's kind of a myth, right? That, you know, once upon a time, everybody worked for the same employer for 40 years and then you retired and you got a gold watch and they gave you like 65% of your final average pay, and then you got Social Security. So basically you got a paycheck for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. People fantasize about the good old days that way. Like, never did more than like 50% of Americans ever have a pension. So right out of the gate, like, us fantasizing about the glorious past is like just not
interesting.
Real. Couple things about pensions. They still exist for some state employees. State governments, local governments still have pensions. Not everybody, but some. First responders often have pensions. Like, you put in 20 years, you put in 30 years, you get your paycheck. A couple of small handful of corporations still have pensions, but they've mostly moved away from pensions. And the reason why is not necessarily because they're cold-hearted and evil, but because about 15 years ago, the government passed some laws and regulations that changed the way companies have to do the accounting for the pension. Okay. And because of those accounting changes, it used to be that because you were investing money for these pensions that you'd be paying out for the next 65 mm-hmm. years, right? Like, forever, they could do something called smoothing the assets that they held. And so they'd take the average of the returns over 5 years, and that would be how they accounted for it. The law changed and said that you have to do something called marking to market, so that every year you have to say, actually, this is exactly what it's worth. And because of the huge run-up in stocks and the huge change in interest rates and these accounting rules, it suddenly started looking a lot more expensive for the companies to have these defined benefit plans, these pension plans, on their balance sheet.
Oh.
And so the size of the pension got bigger and bigger and bigger. And for some big companies like Ford, or, you know, name a big old line company with a lot of retirees, the pension plan was like 5 or 10 times bigger than like the ongoing business of running the car.
Whoa.
So it turned into this crazy thing that was swinging around the value of the stock. And like, management was like, I have a pension plan and I make some cars on the side, right? So that change in the law made a lot of companies sort of say, look, we can't handle this financial risk of this pension swinging around. And oh, by the way, because of these accounting rules, we're now what's called underwater, because interest rates drop so much. It gets super technical on pension funding and like kind of boring. Yeah. But basically, as interest rates go down, right, it looks like you don't have enough money to pay your pensions. Interest rates go back up, you have enough money to pay your mm-hmm. pensions. So because these companies were underfunded, they couldn't just close them and give people annuities.
Right.
So they had to wait. So they all were just like, this is too much crazy volatility. We can't handle it. We just need to stop the craziness for the company's sake. And at the same time, right, so this is all happening in like the 80s and 90s. At the same time, American workers are starting to move employers more. So a defined benefit pension really works if you stay at the employer for at least 20 or 30 years.
Oh, wow.
Okay, show of hands. How many people here have worked for this? Like, I worked for JP Morgan for almost 30 years. I'm kind of weird that way. Like, my kids have already changed jobs twice. Like, if you're not going to stay with the same company, a defined benefit pension plan gives you zip.
Right.
Like, it's a terrible pension. A 401k plan
can move around.
If you save, you can bring it with you. Mm-hmm. So for a much more mobile workforce, right, which we have today, a 401k plan is actually a lot better, mm-hmm. except that you, the individual worker, are the one who's owning the risk.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Of the markets going up or down, or the risk that you don't save enough.
Right. That you don't fund it.
Right. So those are the two risks that have been shifted to the individual person now that used to be on the company.
So what's an annuity? Sorry.
Okay. An annuity, right, is a contract that you get from an insurance company. And the simplest kind of annuity is, I give you my $100,000. It's called an immediate annuity. And you're going to give me $5,000 a year until I die. Mm-hmm. You know, if I did it at 65, I could live for 10 years. I could live for 40 years. That's not my problem. That's your problem, insurance company.
Okay.
So it's a way to make sure you get a certain amount of money all the time. And so you take out of the equation, right, the risk that the market does something crazy. It's the insurance company's problem. And you take out the risk that you live to be 110.
So,
and you run out of money.
Yeah.
Because your money's got to last a really long time.
So that's something that they would just give you if you had a pension? Like, they could just give that to you?
That's the way an old-fashioned pension would work.
Oh.
And so when you give your money, like, you take some money in your 401k plan and you give it to an insurance company and buy an annuity from them, you're basically recreating that pension kind of income. They give you a check for life.
Okay.
they give you a little bit less than you would probably earn by yourself.
Oh.
Because they're guaranteeing it.
Okay. Yeah, that's the catch always.
Well, there's, you know, there's no free lunch here, right? Like the only free lunch is compound returns if you leave your money alone. That's kind of a free lunch. But like for this insurance company, the insurance company is taking the risk that the markets are bad and they're taking the risk that you live to 110.
I have a question. Should you always max out if you have an IRA or SEP, like Roth or SEP IRA, should you always max it out?
I don't know. Can you afford to?
Well, yeah, but like, is it better to do that if you can? Even a little bit because of taxes. Like, you know what I mean? Like, is it better to be like, okay, let me just do that so that taxes are better versus like,
well, or it. Is it also good to put it into a Roth 401k, right? Where you have to pay the taxes on the income, but then it grows forever tax-free and you don't owe any taxes on the way out. If you're young, right? A lot of people would say it's good to look at a Roth IRA or a Roth. I don't know if they have Roth SEPs actually, but a Roth IRA, right? You pay your income tax. Then you put the money in, you can get it out without all the tax penalties for certain reasons. And when you pull it out, when you're 65, you don't pay any income tax. Most people who are younger, right, in their 20s and maybe 30s are going to be at a lower tax bracket now than they will be when they're 65.
Ideally.
So it's actually better to pay the tax up front. And then it grows a lot more. And then you don't have to pay taxes on the way out. So it's actually for young people, if you're at a low tax bracket, it's probably makes a lot of sense to do that in a Roth. The problem with putting it, so there are two challenges with what, when I said, I don't know, can you afford
sure.
it, right? If you think you want the money before you turn 59 and a half, it's a really good idea not to put it all into your IRA because you can't get it out without the tax penalty.
Right. Yeah. So let's go back. Can you explain like, so 401k is through a company, but, or through where you work, mm-hmm. but now you can kind of have an individual one, right?
You can only, and again, I'm going to repeat, I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not a financial planner. You got to do your own homework here. But a single employer plan or a SEP 401k is set up for people who are basically self-employed. Mm-hmm. And you can contribute, you're your own employer, right? So you set up an employer plan for yourself and you can contribute a lot more to that than you can to an IRA.
Okay.
Because the limit on contributions in an IRA is not very high. It's only $7,000 this year. The limit inside a 401k plan is $23,000. And I think the SEP limit is like something like $68,000 or mm-hmm. something. So it depends, right, on what you have. The IRAs have a pretty low ceiling, right, in terms of making contributions. A 401k plan from an employer, or sometimes they're called 403b plans, are like a whole bunch of different little codes that refer to the tax code, but basically they all work the same way. Which is that you put money in, a lot of times the employer will match
it, yeah.
So if you have access to a 401k plan or a 403b plan at work, you really want to get the free money. Get the match. So if they're matching 50% of what you put in, you're already getting a guaranteed 50% return on your contributions.
Wild.
That's insane.
So if I'm self-employed, right? I can't go get myself a 401k. Like only things I can get are
nope.
things I can contribute like less to. I can't get one that I contribute to $23,000 to.
Not the $23,000, but if you set up a SEP, a single employer plan, the limits are higher and you can put in more money.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think you can put more money. I don't want to say something stupid here.
Yeah,
but.
I was just looking it up because I think last year for me, I was able to, for my SEP, I was able to put in like $9,000 or something like that, like the max.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
So you're like self-employed, you get a SEPA Roth. Now, why were you saying that someone's, I'm like 35. What are the differences between the two and in terms of tax reasons? Because I know we said, okay, so it's better if you're younger because you'll be in a higher tax bracket to pay the taxes when you're older. But yeah, what is the difference between the two?
This gets really complicated really fast. Okay, so a regular IRA, you put in $7,000. Let's say you make $67,000 a year. You put in $7,000, you only get taxed on
$60,000. Right.
So you're paying less income tax now. That money grows tax-free until you can take it out. Earliest is 59 and a half. You might be able to wait till you're 75. It's 73 now, but if you're born after whatever, I can't remember date. It's like right around your age is when it flips to 75. You can leave it in longer. You pay income tax on it then.
Okay.
So they're going to tax you on the way in or they're going to tax you on the way out. They're going to tax you for sure one way or the other. So if they tax you on the way out, you pull it out as income. And then when you're 65 or 68 or whatever, you're paying tax at whatever tax bracket you're in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we don't know what those taxes will be like. I think it's not a crazy assumption to think that they'll be higher than they are today, given the size of the deficit. But like, that's a gamble. We don't know. So if you do a Roth IRA and you make $67,000 a year and you contribute $7,000 a year, you still pay taxes on all $67,000. So you're paying whatever your tax bracket is, like $2,000 in taxes, and then you're contributing $7,000. So you'll have less money today by doing that Roth. That money will grow tax-free. There are fewer restrictions on tapping that money for things if you need it.
Mm.
You won't pay any income taxes if you tap it. So it's a lot more flexible. And when you're 65 or 67, there are fewer restrictions on mandatory withdrawals. And it's probable that you will be in a comparable or higher tax bracket. So getting to take it tax-free then is going to be a real big benefit because you won't owe 30% tax on that.
Right. So it's just kind of judging what you think your situation will be or what it is now.
Yeah. I think some conventional financial planning advice is it's good to have some investments that are tax-free and taxable because you want to be able to look at where you are and like decide what's best for you that year. And if it's all one or all the other, you don't have the ability to kind of manage your taxes. Again, that's what financial planners do. That's why they get paid lots of money, because that those decisions when you're older and have some assets can be really expensive if you get them wrong. Most people would say in your 20s and probably somewhere in your 30s, it makes sense to do Roth and then you should flip into regular. You know, you can look it up online. There are all kinds of guides. And, you know, my former employer, JP Morgan, has a great one that talks about when it makes sense to switch. But, you know, it's a personal decision based on your current financial circumstances and then what you imagine those might be like in 30 years, which is always a bit of a guessing game.
I know. They love to make you guess.
Well, so here's one of the reasons why doing this for most people is so unpleasant, right? You're saving money and giving it to a stranger, and you're making yourself feel pain in the moment because you don't get to buy all the stuff you want right now. Okay, so that's not good. You're investing it in markets that go up and down, and that's scary. You're trying to imagine what your needs will be like in 30 years, which is like definitionally unknowable. And oh, by the way, you have to plan on like thinking about doing this until you die. So why do I even want to have this conversation? Like, there's just nothing good going on here, right? So all of these elements like put you in a terrible frame of mind to make rational decisions. Like, it's just icky, right? So it's not surprising most people don't like doing this, which is why I'm a huge advocate for like trying to automate what you can, either through your 401k, through a financial advisor, through, you know, automatic debits, automatic investing. Like the less you make yourself think about the stuff you find icky, the more mental energy you'll have and emotional energy you'll have to think about the big decisions that might make a big difference. Like, hey, can I figure out how to save 1% more? It's much better to try to think about that when you're not going, oh, this is so awful, I don't want to do it, right? Like, that's a bad place to try to save money.
No, absolutely. We're talking with our last guest about fight or flight and like that being where you operate from monetarily always.
Yeah, and you make bad decisions there. You just do.
That's what's so hard, right? Is like you don't have money, so you make bad decisions because you're scared. Then you do have money and you're just kind of coasting and then things are more free and you're able to just compound money on money. And it's like getting to the first part of having money and then keeping it without, I don't know, getting sick, getting in a car accident, something bad happening. Like it's just like so, it's like the worst video game.
Well, I think that's a great point. And again, I just go back to saying, and I talk about this a lot in my book, like automate. Don't make yourself make those decisions, right? Just get rid of them. Emergency fund first. Emergency fund before 401k, emergency fund before everything. So that if that happens, right, you get into that, whatever happens, you're not just blowing your life up, right?
What if you have your own like LLC or your own S Corp, can you make a 401k for yourself?
Oh, now you're getting way outside of my level of comfort. Like, talk to your accountant on that one. That's not what I do.
I'm just curious. I'm scheming.
I think so.
I'm constantly.
I think so. Maybe check with the tax person.
That's true. Right. That is a taxes thing. You're right.
That's a tax thing.
Yeah. So when you are talking to young people again, I'm just curious, like it's that. And then what are some of the questions they have or what are some of the things that they are fundamentally misunderstanding or is getting in the way, just not even spiritually, but like logistically?
So logistically, I think some of the questions we started with, like what is an ETF and how is that different from the S&P? Like those are like Mack trucks and cucumbers. Like they've got nothing to do with one another. Like the S&P is the name of an index that tracks how companies are performing, and an ETF is a legal wrapper around investments. Right. Like they're in different categories of thing, right? So just the way the financial press, the stuff online, social media talks about these things, it's like it's all interchangeable and like is not interchangeable. And so when you go to say, oh, well, I want to do X, I should buy an X, like there is no X to buy. So right there, people get stuck.
Yeah.
So I think that's a, and then the second thing I hear really commonly, and I just had this conversation like a month or two ago, is somebody who was doing like almost all of the right things and was just terrified that they weren't and didn't know who they could ask for reassurance.
Really?
Like, am I doing this right? And for whatever reason, they didn't feel comfortable talking to their parents about it. And they were just like, well, I don't want to ask my friends because then I'll look stupid. And I don't want to ask HR because, you know, what about HR is going to, you know, what are they going to tell me? I don't, you know. And so she said, you know, I'm saving this amount. And I said, well, that's great. Like, that's really good. And, you know, they've got student loans to pay. And I'm like, okay, so just you're doing fine. Like you're 26 years old. Like you're doing fine. Mm-hmm. You're on track. You're doing a great job. You should feel good mm-hmm. about it. And they were just like, I should.
Yeah.
Cause they were just, you know, beating themselves up. And if this is a marathon, this is not a sprint, right? You are not going to fix if you're working on paying off debt and you're trying to build up some savings, this doesn't just happen poof, right? It is like a multi-month, probably multi-year journey. Yeah. The thing is, like, you can really shift things around in just a year or two. It's hard to see, but you start doing little baby steps, it does kind of add up.
Yeah. In what, like, how do you shift things around in a year or two? Like, what are the steps that you're like, if you just did this right now, we could like sort this out a little bit?
Yeah. So some of it is silly things like how much money are you spending on subscriptions that you don't use?
Yeah, I know.
Like go into your phone. What are you spending money on? I just did this for myself for the first time in like 18 months. I'm finally taking my own advice. I'm like, holy God, like, I had no idea I was still subscribed to that thing. Like, oh my gosh, I haven't used that in 3 years. Like, okay, that was kind of stupid. It's not a huge amount of money, but if you're trying to build up your emergency savings fund, like 3 subscriptions at $189 a year, like that's $600 right there that you might not have, when you signed up for it, it was like, oh, it was, you know, $9.99 a month. or $12 a month. Yeah, that's reasonable. You might have signed up because you wanted that thing right now. And you're like, I'll cancel it later. And, you know, later never comes, right? So those are kind of small dollars for some people. For some people, they're not small dollars, right? But like, I bet most people can go in there and find at least $500 in subscriptions they're not using. Like, just like, how many streaming services do you really
right.
need?
Yeah.
So that's number one. It's just like, maybe there's some small stuff you can just find. The second one, and this is the most powerful one, especially if you're younger. When you're younger, when you're in your first or second or third job, right, it's very, very likely that you're going to see some meaningful salary increases as you gain experience and get more valuable and get promoted. Promise yourself today that you will save half of your next raise.
And just put it where? Just save it somehow?
Put it wherever it needs to go. Do you have an emergency fund? No, put it there. If you've got your emergency fund or mostly built, then put it into your 401k. If you're getting all the free money from your employer, then use it to pay down and you've got your emergency fund, then start tackling any credit card debt or high interest rate student loan debt. Like, but if you commit now to saving money you don't have yet, it doesn't hurt as much.
Because you know where it's going to go. It's not going to, you don't think
you
of it.
You know where, you've got a plan, yeah. Right? Oh, I can really work on getting this down. I'm pretty sure I'm going to get promoted this year. I'm pretty sure I'm going to get a $5,000 tax refund. $2,500 of that better go into your emergency savings fund, right? I mean, think about taking half. It, you know, some people will say, take it all. And I'm like, yeah, especially if you're younger, that's pretty grim. Like, you don't want to be sharing an apartment with five people for the rest of your life, right? So like,
unless you love that and they're all in your polycule.
That's cool. Do what makes you happy. But if you're not living the lifestyle you aspire to, you can still get there. Just get there a little more slowly and make sure you boost up your savings.
Yeah, I think the idea of being able to turn stuff around is hard for people, or they think like, I mean, what you were saying about the person thinking that they weren't doing things right, it's because you don't know who to run it by. Because nobody talks about it. And so you don't know how to run it by your friends because, you know, I have no concept. Like I was doing really well. I went through this terrible breakup and financial decimation. I was very disappointed in myself. So I was judging myself versus my old self when like my, you know, friend was sort of like, well, but like you're better off than look up the statistics. You're better off than like 85% of people our age. You just have nothing to compare it to other than your old self.
Well, and, you know, I think it's fine for us all to have things we aspire to. And again, it sounds like a broken record. Like I talk a lot about this in my book, like beating yourself up does not get you very far. Like I think a lot of this stuff is just accept where you are and make it better. You can forgive yourself for making mistakes. Like it's okay. Don't keep making them. Like maybe that's what you get. Like if you make them four times in a row, then maybe you start getting mad at yourself. But like if you've made them twice and then the third time you don't, that's victory.
I agree. Wow. I could talk to you 100 more hours. Thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you and your book? And when does your book come out?
So my book comes out on the 12th of March. They can find it in all the places online and in any bookstore. It's up right now and ready for pre-orders. And people can find me at AnneLester.com, AnneLester.com. I'm on social media. My handle is SaveSmartWN, Save Smart with Ann, except that was too many letters for Instagram. So it's W. Yeah. So I'm out there and would love to hear from people and, you know, love to get some questions coming in and I can answer them and we can get some conversations going. That would be great.
What is your book called?
My book is called Your Best Financial Life, Save Smart Now for the Future You Want.
We should do another episode where people just write in their questions and then we can do a Q&A. So we did an episode with a friend of mine who's a tax.
I would love that.
Like a tax expert. And we called it the boring episode. And it did so well because she was answering like tax questions. And I was like, I can't believe how well this boring episode did because it's not boring. So I would.
No,
if people,
it's important. Like, yeah, I'd love that.
Yeah.
That'd
if people want to write in, maybe we'll bring Anne back and she can answer your questions because I think probably the book and you in real life were very, very soothing teacher.
I don't know about that. Talk to my team about that. But yeah, no, it was good.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you, Gabe.
Bad with Money with Gabe Shane Dunn is a production of Noted Bisexual, produced by Melissa D. Montz and Diamond M. Print Productions, edited by Diane King. Post-production sound by Coco Lorenz and music by Mike Kaplan, Zach Sherwin, and Jack Dolgen as sung by Sam Barbera. Thank you. Love you. Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.